Hello, I am Tom Weber. Thanks for listening to NPR News here on the radio or online or on our podcast. We have a busy morning this morning. In fact, we were planning to air our latest conversation from Counter Stories, but we will be postponing that because of some developments here that we're going to spend the hour talking about. The one you've just heard in the newscast there at the top of the hour, allegations by a Los Angeles radio host that Senator Al Franken forcibly kissed her during a USO tour in 2006 and then posed for a photo, apparently with his hands on her breasts while she slept. We have a couple other stories we're going to be covering as well. I'm going to start by bringing in Brian Baxt, my colleague here from NPR News, who is at the Capitol right now. Brian, what do we know on the Franken story right now about all of this?
Well, we know it's moving fast, that the accusation was lodged this morning against Senator Franken by a radio host in Los Angeles. And already in Washington, Senator Mitch McConnell, the majority leader, has said he will call for an ethics investigation into Senator Franken. Senator Franken, of course, faced some of these similar questions when he was running for the U.S. Senate about past writings and past behavior toward women. He apologized for them at the time, calling some of those satire. And he's apologized again, but it's not clear whether in this environment and in his position now, where this goes from here.
The host at KABC in Los Angeles is Leanne Tweeden, and here is part of what she said on that radio station earlier this morning.
It happened so fast that I'm like, okay, we're going to rehearse the kiss, you know, and as we're coming in and I come in towards him, you know, we rehearse the line and the line leading up to the kiss. We rehearsed the line and I'm coming towards him and he comes up and he grabs me and he puts his hand behind my head and he aggressively comes in and he mashes his mouth up against mine and he sticks his tongue in my mouth. And as it happens so fast and he puts his tongue in my mouth and his mouth is just wet and slimy. And to this day, I call him fish lips. Okay. Because it's disgusting. And it's like, and how I describe it in my mind is like when a dog, when you're holding a treat for your dog, and I own a dog, and they're salivating while you're holding the treat. That's just what it reminds me of.
Well, that's an incredible violation.
Of course. And you know, my husband now was my boyfriend then. All I could think about is why would somebody do that? He's married. I've got a boy. You know, it was just, I was violated. I was disgusted. That's not what I was expecting. All I could think about was that's what you wrote that in the script for, so you could do that to me. I was angry. I wanted to punch him in the face. I mean, now, so many things were going through my mind.
That's KABC radio host Leanne Tweeden. That is as she spoke on her own station this morning, a talk radio station in Los Angeles, KABC. Brian Baxt, in addition to, I should have set it up a little more, and I apologize for that, but the idea was they're on this USO tour for the troops, and Al Franken writes a skit. According to the Post, the blog post that Leanne Tweeden wrote this morning, she didn't expect to do anything more than introduce Al Franken, but he insisted on her being in the skit. And before they performed the skit, he said, "We have to practice this kiss because it's part of this skit."
And the only thing we've heard from Senator Franken so far was this written statement where he says he doesn't remember rehearsal going that way. So we need to ask more questions, of course, of him to figure out exactly what happened and whether this was part of the skit, because right now these accusations are quite serious.
There are also allegations, and again, I should say, on the KABC website this morning, Leanne Tweeden included in that post includes a photo that shows Al Franken and Tweeden is asleep, appears to be asleep, and his hands are on her breast. She's wearing Kevlar, and his hands are right there on top of it. So Senator Franken's full statement this morning is this: "I certainly don't remember the rehearsal for the skit in the same way, but I send my sincerest apologies to Leanne. As to the photo, it was clearly intended to be funny, but wasn't. I shouldn't have done it." We have requests in for Senator Franken. He has our phone number, and he knows we'll be talking this hour about this. So I hope he can give us a call and we can hear more from him. But Brian, it's also important
I should note that photo hit like a bomb in Washington. I mean, that photo spread fast. It immediately upped the ante here. It wasn't just somebody's recollections. It wasn't just somebody's words. There was kind of a photograph. And there have been other photographs in the past where Al Franken clearly in a joking manner, has kind of had his hands where a woman's breasts might be, you know, on some cones, some traffic cones. But he's explained those as part of his comedy shtick from previous careers.
And this did happen before he was senator. But the point there with Brian Bax is that there's actually these two things happening where the radio host Leanne Tweeden talks about this skit practice where she says that he forced a kiss on her, and then the photo as well, which she says was sent to her by the photographer on that trip. We're going to be talking about this as well for the rest of this hour. I'd like to hear your thoughts here, any questions you have as well, 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. You can tweet me at WeberTom1, and don't call or text if you're driving. But, Brian, there are some other things I wanted to talk about with you, and again, we will come back to this story. But this isn't happening in a vacuum. In Washington, there are conversations about Roy Moore, the Republican nominee for Senate in Alabama. And then, because of reporting here by you and by other outlets, including Brianna Biersbach at MinnPost, this is a story that is playing out at the Minnesota state capitol with allegations there. Bring us up to date on the Minnesota state capitol part of this story.
To date, there have been two members, one House Republican, who is Tony Cornish, and one state senator, Dan Schoen, a Democrat, have been accused of harassment or conduct overtures that women said crossed the line with them. And in the case of Senator Schoen, there have been widespread calls for him to resign. He's not doing that. He's hanging on, and his attorney says he'll fight these allegations. In the case of Representative Cornish, he was stripped of his committee chairmanship. He chairs the Public Safety Committee, and he will be subject of an outside investigation. And one of the reasons that the investigation is going outside is because a lobbyist has put an accusation forward against mm-hmm. him about texts she received that were sexual in nature, and an encounter in his office that she said was kind of had sexual overtures as well.
As we're talking here with Brian Bax, also listening here, Rachel Stassenberger, who recently left the Pioneer Press but was a longtime reporter at the Capitol and has been following this story as well. If you follow Rachel on Twitter, she has been in this story as well in terms of following up on it. You know, people still saying hi, Rachel, and talking to you as well, Rachel. So I'm so glad you could join us. There's such an interesting component here with especially here at the state capitol, with the relationship between a staffer or a lobbyist and then the lawmaker. And then the question is whether people who had things happen to them actually want to come forward to talk. Talk about that a little bit, Rachel, about that dynamic.
That's right. I mean, it's difficult for anyone to come forward with a complaint. You know, the atmosphere at the capitol at times is casual. There's certainly sharp elbows. And one of the questions that women ask themselves is, you know, what is my proper response to this, particularly if it's a powerful person who is putting them in uncomfortable or, frankly, illegal situations? What do I have to do? What is the proper response? You know, if you look at a lobbyist or a fellow lawmaker, you know, they don't know exactly how they are supposed to, you know, who they're supposed to report to, mm-hmm. if it is even reportable. So I think it's been a very difficult situation for a lot of women. And I would also say, you know, one of the factors we haven't heard from is some of the young staffers, some of the pages, some of the interns who really may be just unaware of what's appropriate and not, may feel uncomfortable. You know, we haven't heard their stories, but if these reports and these allegations are credible, just think about the, you know, the 18-year-old or the 19-year-old at the Capitol for the first time and how they might deal with it.
Yeah, Brian, I mean, going on a tour, maybe the teacher is leading someone around. I mean, there are so many people who go in and out of the Capitol. And again, we don't have any specific allegations, but how would that person even report that something went wrong if something goes wrong?
Well, the sexual harassment policies, as they're written, and they've been on the books since the 1990s in the legislature, do reference third parties, whether it be constituents who come by, whether it be reporters who are up here, whether it be lobbyists, that they're supposed to have protections as well. Just the question has been whether these people feel like they would get justice if they did go and complain through the normal HR process, which is the process that is supposed to be there to govern this. And that's why this hiring of an outside firm was kind of a new tact in this. And there are still some women who may not be comfortable because they don't know what might get back to mm-hmm. these people in politics that they have to deal with. And since it's a relationship business, they worry that they might get shut out.
And as we noted a few days ago, Rachel, the idea here, especially if you're a lobbyist, your whole job is precipitated on the fact that you get your calls returned, or you know that you can meet with this person or that person about this policy. And if you make an accusation publicly, there is that concern you'll be frozen out, right?
That's right. And, you know, bear in mind that there has been, you know, on Twitter the other day, I said that the reactions have basically fallen into three camps to what's going on in the Capitol. One is shocked and stunned, and there's some disbelief in there. You know, are you sure this really happened? Did the woman bring it on? You know, there are a second camp, which is people who are not surprised but are glad details are coming out. And then there's the third, which is, frankly, quite partisan. You know, go after a Democrat or go after a Republican. And so I think if you're trying to parse out what the result of all of this is going to be, and you're a professional trying to do your job at the Capitol, depending on which one of these camps people fall into could result in either more people coming forward, confirming these allegations, talking more about this and things change, or, you know, if Senator Cornish or Representative Cornish stays around, you know, he is still a longtime member, has some supporters within the House still, mm-hmm. You know, how do you deal with him in the future? How does your business get impacted if you bring a verifiable complaint?
We are talking this hour with Rachel Stassenberger, a longtime Capitol reporter here in Minnesota, recently left the Pioneer Press. Brian Bax is at the Capitol right now. He's my colleague here at NPR News. We're following several stories, actually. We still haven't gotten to one of the stories, and we will, but the allegations this morning that Senator Al Franken forcibly kissed a radio host in Los Angeles during a USO tour in 2006. The host, whose name is Leanne Tweeden, also says Franken posed for a photo with his hands on her breasts as she slept. And then what we've just been talking about here in the last few minutes, getting an update on where things stand with allegations at the Minnesota State Capitol of allegations of sexual harassment. We're taking your calls and questions as well, 1-800-242-2828. Let's go to Lizzie, who's in Glenwood. Hi, Lizzie. What would you like to add to this?
Hi. I just wanted to add that with all the sexual assault and harassment allegations, what about all the women who have accused Donald Trump?
Good question.
And, the assault of his first wife. I was wondering, why isn't that a huge deal? I mean, he's the president.
Lizzie, thanks so much for the question. Brian, we have to remember that this time a year ago, this is what we were talking about with then-candidate Donald Trump.
And in some ways, that conversation got the ball rolling on more. I mean, if you recall, the New York Times did some very heavy reporting into Bill O'Reilly and then later Harvey Weinstein. And that kind of cracked open this avenue for people to say, yeah, it's happened to me too in this setting, in that setting. It's moving across industry and across technology. And now, naturally, it's into the political realm. So people haven't forgotten. And there's some people who are questioning whether Donald Trump hasn't come out on the Roy Moore stuff because of the accusations that he faced last year around this time. So there's a lot going on, and Donald Trump was still elected. So there is a survivor ability to survive something like this. And so I wouldn't necessarily say that Al Franken is gone yet, but these next few days will be pivotal.
Again, Al Franken's statement, Senator Franken, I certainly don't remember the rehearsal for the skit in the same way. That's when Leanne Tweeden says the forcible kiss, happened. I don't remember the skit in the same way, says Senator Franken, but I send my sincerest apologies to Leanne. As to the photo, it was clearly intended to be funny, but was not. I shouldn't have done it. Rachel Stassenberger, I know you're not stationed in Washington, but we've just been talking about Roy Moore and whether he is qualified to serve in the U.S. Senate. He has allegations with teenagers. I mean, it's a different set of allegations, but they are related in the sexual harassment realm. What does this portend for Senator Al Franken?
Well, I think given the reactions to Moore there, and frankly, you know, in Congress, there have been other allegations of sexual harassment coming out in the last week or so. You know, there is a heightened atmosphere for paying attention to these things and reacting very quickly. You know, obviously, there, as I said, there is some partisan nature of that. You know, Republicans have been a little more shy than Democrats to talk about Moore and say he should not stand. But, you know, I think that there is a lot more attention, which, frankly, for a lot of women who have been uncomfortable, may be a good thing. It really does depend on the reaction. You know, how much is the Franken allegation going to snowball? You know, is there going to be the ethics investigation? You know, what the results of that may be? You know, Franken himself has to make some personal decisions. So there's a lot, as you said, we just don't know yet. But I think there is a lot of attention to this and, you know, people trying to figure out what the right reaction is.
And Brian, I know that it's very new. It's only been a story here for an hour or so or a couple hours. Have we heard any calls for Senator Franken to resign?
Not from anybody in power or in a Democratic side or from his party officials. And that's interesting because, as we noted with Senator Schoen, it was swift and it came from within his party. So that kind of set a tone. And, you know, people are already going back and looking over Senator Franken's recent tweets about the sexual harassment issue, whether it was with Weinstein or with other people. And so some of his words might be used against him.
We have NPR National Public Radio reporter Domenico Montanaro tweeting that Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, has asked that allegations about Senator Franken go to the Ethics Committee. The quote here from the statement from McConnell: "As with all credible allegations of sexual harassment or assault, I believe the Ethics Committee should review the matter. I hope the Democratic leader, which is Chuck Schumer, will join me. Regardless of party, harassment and assault are completely unacceptable in the workplace or anyone else." Let's take a call here from Justin, who's in Winona. Justin, what do you want to add here today?
Hi.
Go right ahead.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for taking my call. You know, with all these allegations that are happening all over the country, I'm just so let down, and I don't really know what to call my 3-year-old daughter when she gets older, that there's a high probability that you're going to be assaulted in some way or another. And that is just so disappointing.
Yeah. Justin, your connection isn't great, but what I heard you say was how disappointed you are and you don't know what to tell your daughter. Rachel Stassenberger, talk a little bit more about that. I mean, this is a charging train at this point with allegations, and there's certainly a lot of thankfulness that they're coming. But just reflect on that a little bit, about where we go from here as these continue to pour out.
Well, I would say that part of it is, I don't think that there is a professional woman, no matter what industry, that hasn't had a moment, whether it's, you know, hey, dude, my eyes are up here, or why did he ask me out? I thought we had a professional relationship. You know, those are not the most extreme cases, obviously, but a lot of women, frankly, have been through an incident. You know, there are degrees, you know, there's... Some of the cases that we've heard coming out in the last couple of weeks are far more extreme. But I do think it is a conversation that women have had, something that they have been dealing with in their professional lives for many, many years. And so there is a question for his 3-year-old daughter, once she's in the workplace, whether we will have a different atmosphere.
Brian?
And Tom, can I chime in here? You know, as you know, I have 2 daughters, and one of them is getting to the age where she's kind of showing more awareness of the news. And as I've been reporting on some of these stories, I found myself having to kind of step away, get in my car, drive down the street, because I'm not sure that I want her to be exposed to the gravity of this yet. But it's going to be important to explain to her later on why I'm doing these stories.
Rachel Stassenberger, I know you have to leave. You have an event coming up, but I really appreciate you giving us a little time on short notice here. Longtime reporter at the Capitol, recently left the Pioneer Press. Thanks so much for your insight here today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Tom, and I'll see you soon, Brian.
About 3 weeks ago, Senator Franken tweeted this on his Twitter feed: "Sexual harassment and violence are unacceptable. We all must do our part to listen, stand with, and support survivors." We are now talking about those allegations against Senator Franken. Again, I'm vacillating between the story about Franken and then also updating people on what's happening here at the Minnesota State Capitol. And to that end, I'm joined by DFL State Representative Jamie Becker Finn, who is one of 3 women, 2 sitting lawmakers, to sign a letter recently asking for a task force to look into this and to address something that Brian was talking about earlier, as along with Rachel, how to even structure a system for reporting and addressing harassment when it is an elected official that is the accused party. Representative Becker Finn, thanks so much for your time. You're a DFLer from Roseville. First of all, your thoughts here today. You're a fellow DFLer from Senator Franken. Do you have any thoughts on what we're hearing about today with Senator Franken?
Well, you know, I think obviously it's really disappointing. And, you know, I've had a lot of text messages this morning with my colleagues as, you know, it's very new news. And I certainly hope that he does call in. I'd like to hear from him about what he has to say about these allegations. And clearly it's important that to note that many, many women have had these experiences, and it's really not a partisan issue.
Do you think he should? Do you think he should resign?
I think that's on the table. I don't know that I would. You know, yeah. I think it's a little too soon to state that one way or the other. But I think it's important that, number one, that we believe these women who are stepping forward. You know, no matter who it is that the allegations are against, and men need to take responsibility for the way that they're acting.
Tell me about your effort here to address this at the Capitol. There seems to be this very unknown area in the world where if the person perpetrating is an elected official, there are ways to remove an elected official, but just that whole HR structure, the way we think about it in the workplace here, you know, if you work at NPR or some other office, it's so, as I understand, different. And maybe not on paper, but in practice. So what needs to change at the Capitol, Representative?
Well, I think, you know, step one was bringing this to the light and making sure that the public is aware of this. So step one is admitting that there definitely is a problem. And then step two is the task force that Representative May Quaid and Lindsay Port and myself called for last week to address the culture both at the Capitol and in campaigns, and really setting up a system of reporting that is not partisan and is not kind of colored by political views and, you know, who's trying to gain more power within state government, and is based on doing the right thing and making sure people are being held accountable at every level.
What about retribution, especially if you're a lobbyist or a staffer? If you go public and then the lawmaker doesn't leave office, are you in danger of never being able to meet with that lawmaker or work with that lawmaker again, unless it's more explicitly written somewhere? Do you know what I'm going for here, Representative?
Yeah, no, and I think that's a very real fear and the very real reason why people haven't spoken up sooner. You know, it's a very unique power structure at the Capitol. You know, technically every representative holds the same type of election certificate, but the reality is that, you know, the party in power holds more power. Whoever holds a gavel holds more power. And it's a very real fear and a very real reason many women don't come forward. And I will say I've heard from a lot of folks since the story first broke, reaching out to me with stories that have not yet become public, both men and women who've had, you know, negative experiences at the Capitol.
And Brian, without giving away sources, my understanding is that would be something that reporters are running into as well. If they're trying to follow up, you're trying to find maybe there are other allegations out there, this hesitancy exists at all levels.
Absolutely. I mean, I've spoken to a number of women who can very vividly describe what happened to them, when it happened to them, but they're not yet comfortable sharing that because they know it will immediately be traced to them. I reported last night on a group of about a dozen women who lobby at the Capitol who have begun meeting with each other to share their experiences, but they say they're not even sharing offender names with each other because they don't want stuff that could potentially be traced back to them. And they're trying to figure out, how do we make sure that this is made public without it, you know, just hurting our own careers?
Let's go back to the phones here. We're taking your calls. We're following up on this news. A few items here, one being that Democratic Senator Al Franken of Minnesota is accused today by a radio host in Los Angeles of forcibly kissing her during a USO tour in 2006, and that he also posed for a photo with his hands on her breasts as she slept. And the host, Leanne Tweeden, in her post that she put on the KABC website this morning. That's where she's a talk show host. She has a photo that shows the scene that we just described there with Franken touching her, and so she posted that on the website there as well. We're taking your calls as well, 1-800-242-2828. Before I let you go, Representative Becker Finn, what has to come from this? I mean, you're talking about a task force. You want to see, I guess, at the HR level, rules changed at the Capitol for how you report this, but how does that actually then change in culture and in practice? Is it already changing just because of this tsunami of allegations, or does something else have to happen?
Well, I think, you know, we can always continue to move in the direction of people just acting more appropriately with their colleagues. But I think that we will see changes because of all this, because if nothing else, folks now know that if they act this way, there are those of us who will believe victims and will help bring those stories to light. And I would certainly hope that at a minimum, to, you know, not knowing where this task force is going to go or how quickly we'll be able to get that up and running. I think just the fact that we are publicly talking about this on the radio and in the media, and people are paying attention. And I think it's going to bring change, because people will know they'll be held accountable now, even if it's only on Twitter. You know, I think that this behavior was allowed to continue for such a long time because there were never any consequences, and there are finally some consequences for this behavior.
Jamie Becker Finn, a DFL lawmaker from Roseville, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me as part of the conversation.
We should note, though, Brian, as far as consequences go, here in the State House, where Senator Dan Schoen and Representative Tony Cornish have been accused, they have not seen the consequence of having resigned yet or being forced from office. That has not played out. We should update and let people know that as well. Does that affect whether people are going to come forward as well?
Absolutely. A lot of people are watching these first two cases to determine whether these allegations will be treated as seriously as they probably should be. And in the Senate, there could be an ethics complaint filed against Senator Schoen. In the House, this investigation right now is exclusively around Tony Cornish, because those are the only allegations that have become public. In fact, House Speaker Kurt Dowd was asked about whether he's heard of any other allegations in the past week, and he says he's not. And that was just about, you know, 20 minutes ago.
And in that, we are going to continue with this conversation. I need to take a complete 180, though, with you, Brian. I want to take just a few minutes to bring people up to date on another story that happened that has ramifications at the Capitol as well. Has nothing to do with sexual harassment, but we will come back to that topic in a few moments. But this is of note. There was an important ruling today from the Minnesota Supreme Court about something that happened earlier this year in a budget standoff between the governor and the legislature. Remind us what happened and tell us what today's ruling was.
So back in May, the governor signed the entire state budget for the next 2 years, except for the House and Senate budgets, which he lined out and vetoed. And he did that because he wanted to get lawmakers back to the table to negotiate on some of these items he didn't want to see in the budget and tax bills, but he couldn't stop because he would have had to take down entire bills and potentially put his revenue department in a shutdown mode if he didn't sign the entire state government finance bill, because there was this clause in there that said that the tax bill must become law for the revenue department to get its money. And so they went to court. The legislature won the first round, and it got to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court at first said, you guys just need to go and talk more about this. And that was back in September. That didn't go anywhere. And so now today, the Supreme Court ruled that the governor was within his power to use those line item vetoes. It was expressly granted to him in the Constitution. And the legislature is just going to have to figure it out until it comes back in February. The court stopped short of saying ruling on everything. There's one point they didn't rule on, is whether the governor was using his veto power coercively. And so it doesn't really do much for the legislature now, because the effect is the same. They are going to have to dip deeper into reserves. And in fact, just this morning, they slid aside some money from joint legislative accounts to try to get them into next session without any major disruptions, major layoffs. And then at that point, presumably, they'll pass new funding measures for themselves.
And so just to clarify, right, when you say funding for the legislature, you're talking in part about the salaries we, the taxpayers, pay our lawmakers. But then there's also staff. There are hardworking staff who actually work behind the scenes to make the stuff they need salaries paid for. And there had been talk, I know, at least from the Senate side, that there were going to be all these layoffs coming. Did the court ruling today say you shall not lay off anyone and you shall find a way to pay everyone until this is figured out? Or could there still be layoffs?
The court didn't say that. And in fact, the court said the legislature has to decide how to manage its own operations through this. And so there was some talk that if the legislature didn't get access to this joint accounts, which both chambers had to kind of vote on through their leadership, they would have to start laying people off as soon as January and maybe even earlier, and that paychecks for lawmakers wouldn't be given out sometime into February, and the building that they work in would be locked and their key cards wouldn't work because they didn't have a budget to kind of keep it operating. They did kind of slide, as I mentioned, some of this money aside to kind of keep them going. But one thing they didn't do was approve money for the Senate building rent payments. And why does that matter? Well, because those rent payments go into a fund that pays bonds on that new building. And if those bonds don't get paid, the state's entire credit rating could be at stake. House Republican Speaker Kurt Dowd said, you know, I'm not going to fix this mess for Governor Mark Dayton. That's a consequence he's going to have to live with. So there could still be a showdown ahead over whether those payments get made and how.
So the governor won today in this ruling, and his statement says, I'm very pleased that the Supreme Court has upheld my line item veto authority. He's won, but what has he won? Does he actually now have leverage if they want to go back and figure some of this stuff out?
Well, if you listen to what the lawmakers are saying, they're not going back to the table yet. They say that now that we've made this temporary arrangement, we can get back to session. The governor wanted a ruling from the Supreme Court because he wanted to make sure that this veto power that's vested in the Constitution is real. And so he's got that. But lawmakers, of course, still see it differently. They think that the governor now has more power over the legislature in the future. So don't be surprised if you see a constitutional amendment coming to your ballot next year that kind of tightens that veto power a bit.
Okay, so that is the news about the court ruling, which you can find on nprnews.org. We're going to go back, though, for the remainder of this hour to revisit the big story of the day here just this morning, and we're going to replay this piece of audio that you might have heard if you're just joining us. There's the allegation this morning from a Los Angeles radio host who says Minnesota's junior U.S. Senator Al Franken, a Democrat, forcibly kissed her during a USO tour in 2006. This was before he was a U.S. senator. The host also says Franken posed for a photo with his hands on her breasts as she slept. The host, Leanne Tweeden, posted that photo on a blog post or on the website for KABC, which is where she is a radio host in Los Angeles. She also talked about this morning on her show. And what you're about to hear is the scene. So the idea here, and this is according to Leanne Tweeden's statement, went on this USO tour for the troops. Al Franken writes a skit and says, I want you to be in it, Leanne Tweeden. It involves a kiss. We need to practice the kiss before we go on stage and do it for real.
It happened so fast that as I'm like, okay, we're going to rehearse the kiss, you know, and as we're coming in and I come in towards him, you know, we rehearse the line and the line leading up to the kiss. We rehearsed the line and I'm coming towards him and he comes up and he grabs me and he puts his hand behind my head and he aggressively comes in and he mashes his mouth up against mine and he sticks his tongue in my mouth. And as it happens so fast and he puts his tongue in my mouth and his mouth is just wet and slimy. And to this day, I call him fish lips. Okay. Because it's disgusting. And it's like, and how I describe it in my mind is like when a dog, when you're holding a treat for your dog, and I own a dog, and they're salivating while you're holding the treat. That's just what it reminds me of.
Well, that's an incredible violation.
Of course. And you know, my husband now was my boyfriend then. All I could think about is why would somebody do that? He's married. I've got a boy. You know, it was just, I was violated. I was disgusted. That's not what I was expecting. All I could think about was that's what you wrote that in the script for. So you could do that to me. I was angry. I wanted to punch him in the face. case? I mean, now, so many things are going through my mind.
Again, that's Leon Tweeden talking about her allegations this morning on KABC, where she is a host. KABC is a talk show, a talk radio station in Los Angeles. In the last few minutes, one of Senator Franken's colleagues, Senator Claire McCaskill of Missouri, has tweeted this. Al Franken, I'm shocked and concerned. The behavior described is completely unacceptable. Comedy is no excuse for inappropriate conduct, and I believe there should be an ethics investigation. Brian Bax, my colleague here at NPR News, we've heard calls for the ethics investigation, but just to bring people up to date, and I know you've been on the air with me, but have we heard any calls at this point? And again, it's only about a two-hour story, but are there any calls for Senator Franken to resign?
I just refreshed my email, and so far we haven't.
I'm also seeing on your Twitter feed here, you retweeted Sam Brody, who is a reporter for MinnPost out in Washington, who said that he had talked to Minnesota Representative Jason Lewis, who is a Republican. He would not say whether
Hey, Tom, can I interrupt you for a second?
Yeah, please do.
We just got a longer statement from Senator Franken.
Oh, we did.
If you want me to read part
please
of it
do.
Or
please.
All of it, I
go
all
ahead.
Right, so this just came in. The first thing I want to do is apologize to Leanne, to everyone else who was part of that tour, to everyone who has worked for me, to everyone I represent, and to everyone who counts on me to be an ally and supporter and champion of women. There's more I want to say, but the first and most important thing is, and if it's the only thing you hear, you care to hear, that's fine, is I'm sorry. I respect women. I don't respect men who don't. And the fact that my own actions have given people a good reason to doubt that makes me feel ashamed. But I want to say something else, too. Over the last few months, all of us, including and especially men who respect women, have been forced to take a good hard look at our own actions and think, perhaps shamefully for the first time, about how those actions have affected women. For instance, that picture, I don't know what was in my head when I took that picture, and it doesn't matter. There's no excuse. I look at it now and I feel disgusted with myself. It isn't funny. It's completely inappropriate. It's obvious how Leanne would feel violated by that picture. And what's more, this is from Senator Franken, I can see how millions of other women would feel violated by it. Women who have had similar experiences in their own lives, women who fear those experiences, women who look up to me, and women who have counted on me. Coming from the world of comedy, I've told and written a lot of jokes that once I thought were funny, but later came to realize were just plain offensive. But the intentions behind my actions aren't the point at all. It's the impact these jokes have had on others that matters. And I'm sorry it's taken me so long to come to terms with that. He goes on to talk about, well, he doesn't remember the rehearsal. He understands why we need to listen and believe women's experiences. I am asking that an ethics investigation be undertaken, and I will gladly cooperate. And that the truth is, what people think of me in light of this is far less important than what people think of women who continue to come forward to tell their stories. They deserve to be heard and believed, and they deserve to know that I am their ally and supporter. I have let them down and committed to making it up to them. And that's the statement we got just moments ago from Senator Franken, expanding on what he said earlier.
Send that to me too, Brian, and hold on to it because I may have you read from parts of it again. But again, that's Brian Bax, my colleague at NPR News, reading what we just got. We had gotten an initial statement that was a couple sentences from Senator Franken, and he just read the more expanded statement that just came through from Senator Franken. So we will be adding that to our coverage as well.
I want to underscore the point that he says an investigation should go forward on himself.
And he wants himself to be investigated. As we talk about this, Ellen Sampson has been listening. She recently retired after 33 years with the Stinson Leonard Street Law Firm, has led many training sessions about sexual harassment in the workplace. She was a guest with Kathy Werzer earlier this week, or possibly last week. Ellen, there's been so much about this story in the last few days and all of these stories. I can't even remember when you were on, but thanks for coming back to NPR News. Give me your sense of what's happening here today, the latest allegation with Senator Franken. What are you reflecting on with all your experience as a sexual harassment lawyer?
Thank you. Good morning, Tom. And please forgive my voice. I'm coping with some laryngitis. I have been thinking back to 1980 when the Minnesota courts first ruled that sexual harassment was a violation of the Minnesota Human Rights Act. And back to 1986, when the United States Supreme Court ruled that sexual harassment was a violation of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And I think it's a sad commentary that all these years later, we're still addressing the legalities and the ins and outs of these issues. There are a couple of kinds of harassing behavior. It's a complicated matter, but to be as simple as I can, it is clearly a violation of statute to try to engage in what we call quid pro quo sexual harassment, which means I will promote you if you sleep with me, or I will hire you if you do X, Y, or Z. It's a violation of state and federal law. It is also a violation of state and federal law to create a hostile work environment for the people in our workplace. And that does not necessarily require threats for termination or refusal to promote or those kinds of direct threat type situations, but to just create an environment where people can't do their jobs because they are made so uncomfortable by the sexuality that is rife in the workplace. So it's not that this is a new issue. It's an interesting question as to why it seems like every 25 or 30 years we have had this come up. I mean, the law dealt with it in the 1980s. In the late 80s and early 90s, we had Professor Anita Hill making allegations of sexual harassment against someone who went on to be appointed to the Supreme Court, and an all-male Senate Judiciary Committee basically brutalized her and made it seem as if she were either it didn't happen, so she was a liar, or if it happened sometimes, somehow she welcomed it, which is sort of a classic blame the victim scenario. So it's not that it's new. Mm-hmm. We have had it. We've had outbursts involving Republicans and Democrats. And I'm not sure exactly what has triggered this willingness of women to come forward now in a tsunami of complaints in the media industry and Hollywood and politics. But I think some of it, my theory is that some of it is the fury that women have felt when they listen to the Access Hollywood tape, and the sense that, you know, at the highest levels of office, this is now considered acceptable behavior, and it has made people come forward. I also think that when some people come forward, such as Gretchen Carlson and here in Minnesota, some of our own state legislators who come forward and say, this bad thing happened to me, it gives other people the courage to say, if they can do it, I will step forward and I will raise my voice. I think it's just, it's one of those times when it's our opportunity to say, it's not acceptable. We need to think about what we're doing, and we need to set up processes and procedures so that people who have a complaint can have it addressed in a fair and open way.
Yeah, let me take a call here, Ellen, from Suzanne, who's in Minnetonka, who I think has a comment here that maybe you can address, Ellen. Suzanne, go right ahead. What did you want to add to this?
Well, it's interesting to me that it seems we're all afraid to comment that this should be a spectrum, that we can absolutely validate that what Senator Franken did is wrong, that there's no excuse for it, that he can be held accountable, but that earlier in the conversation, about 25 minutes ago, his name was being used in the same sentence with Candidate Moore. And as a mother of three small children, two girls, I absolutely would not use his name in the same sentence with Candidate Moore. That sexual misconduct with 14-year-olds is completely different than sexual harassment and forcibly kissing an adult woman.
Right.
And while as a woman myself, I would find Senator Franken's behavior unacceptable, and I stand with that woman, it is completely different in my mind behavior, and I don't understand why we think of this as black and white behavior.
Suzanne, thanks for the call. I was the one who said that, so you were aiming those comments at me, and you are correct, and the point is taken. My larger point had to do with sexual wrongdoing in general, but I take your point. But Ellen, talk about that. I mean, on the Roy Moore side of the scandal, we're talking about pedophilia, basically. We're talking about raping a teenage girl. And then there are other accusations with Senator Franken. Where do you classify these? Again, her point was don't put them in the same sentence. What would you do, Ellen, when you're talking about these cases?
I agree with Suzanne. I mean, in every state has laws about when a person is a minor and when a person is no longer a minor. Engaging in inappropriate behavior with a minor is a crime. I mean, that is, Suzanne is quite correct about that, and I agree with her. I mean, nothing in life is easy to classify. That's where we get in trouble when we start saying it's all this or it's all that. I mean, every situation mm-hmm. has to be judged for what the facts are, for who was involved, to what happened. Certain kinds of behavior can be offensive,
yeah.
but not illegal. There is a long history of case law that will tell you, you know, in order to if you violate Title VII or the Minnesota Human Rights Act, those are not criminal statutes; those are civil statutes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very different. And Suzanne is smart to pick up on that right away, and everyone should. In order to make a claim for sexual harassment under a civil statute like Title VII or the Human Rights Act, you have to prove that that it was pervasive. You have to, you know, it has to achieve a certain level of seriousness. You have to prove in some cases that you don't even have to prove that you suffered harm. Just that the bad behavior itself is enough. But it's a highly complicated legal discussion. And then there's a whole other area which, and this again, it doesn't really matter whether it's men hitting on young boys,
yeah.
or men hitting on women, or conceivably women hitting on women, or women hitting on men. If it's a criminal matter, then that is a violation of state or federal statute.
Now,
and that is different.
Let me jump in there, Ellen. Brian, I think you have in front of you a new statement from the chair of the Republican Party of Minnesota. Is that right?
Yeah, and they're calling on Senator Franken to resign his Senate seat, saying that the people of Minnesota deserve better representation than this in the United States Senate. And Al Franken's weak, equivocating apology isn't going to cut it. The interesting part here is they also called for Senator Schoen to leave. They haven't called for Representative Cornish to leave amid the allegations he's facing. So there is a bit of a double standard going on here that they want the Democrat to go, but they're not saying the Republican should go.
So they've now called on two Democrats to resign, but they have not called on the Republican, who is also accused, to resign. Is that right?
That's correct.
We are going to play another clip here as we talk to Brian Bax from NPR, Ellen Sampson on the line, a retired lawyer, I should say, as well, who did a lot of training on sexual harassment. It's another clip from Leanne Tweeden from KABC in Los Angeles this morning, who made the accusations today against Senator Franken. Again, this is from the radio station where she works in L.A. She spoke with one of her colleagues, Doug McIntyre, on the air about her experience on that USO tour where these incidents, she says, happened.
After everything that had happened to me and seeing that photo later, he knew that I wouldn't see that photo until I got home.
And so would everybody else on the tour, because the disc was given to everybody.
Sure. And, and maybe it was just given to me and him. I don't know. But, there were other people that were awake on that plane. And I'm sure there were other, obviously the photographer took it, and I'm sure other people were awake that probably were laughing at it. And maybe, the photographer is probably just taking photos of everybody asleep. Mark Wills, another country singer, was sleeping next to me. So you can see part of him sleeping next to me. And it's probably one of those things where, he thought, oh, hey, this is funny. You're taking a picture of Leanne sleeping. Hey, why don't you get this? And it's just that mentality that he thought he could get away with it and that it was funny. And then it's funny that you can grab someone's breast while they're sleeping and just think that, hey, I can get away with this. And that's that mentality that I'm like, that's funny, because, when I opened that photo, when I got home, it was embarrassing. I felt belittled. I was ashamed. And I'm thinking, I've had to live with this for 11 years. I wanted to come out and like release this photo and tell the world about it 10 years ago when I got home and just be like, look at what Al Franken did long before he was a senator, long before, you know, anything. And
why didn't you? Why didn't you come out 11 years ago?
You know, I talked to Chris, my now husband, and you know, he's like, why? It's not worth it, you know, because, and I even thought to myself, if I do that, you know, back then it was way different. You know, the times were different. I was worried about my career because people are going to go, oh, you're a model. You've been on the cover of Playboy. You're a lingerie model and a swimsuit model. And you're a sportscaster and you're a girl in Hollywood. Who are they going to believe you? They're just going to bury you. They're going to look for all the bones in your closet. I mean, all, you know, it somehow it was going to be my fault. Somehow it was going to come down on me and he was going to skate, you know, he was going to get off scot-free and it was going to be, everything was going to come down on me and it was just not going to be worth it. It was not going to be worth the fight. It was not going to be worth the hassle.
That is Leanne Tweeden discussing the allegations this morning on the radio station where she hosts the morning show KABC in Los Angeles. Brian Bax, thank you for being here this whole hour, last minute here. I know you have a busy day ahead of you, but just what else will you be looking for here today on this story? A couple other stories you're covering, I know, but what should we be paying attention to?
I'm just wondering if other women who maybe have been sitting on things of their own would come out. I mean, that's what we've seen the pattern with other things. I'm not saying there are, but just, you know, does one person help bring out other people? And just at the legislative front, does the focus on Senator Franken kind of cool it down over here because, you know, he's a bigger fish?
Thank you so much for being here, Brian. I appreciate it. I know you have a lot of work to do. I appreciate you being here. Ellen Sampson, retired attorney here, only about 30 seconds left. Final thoughts from what you heard there in the tape there, especially about this idea that the blame would come back to me as you heard Leanne talk there. And again, only about 30 seconds.
I think that's a classic worry. That's why a lot of women don't come forward. And I would say also this is a terrible time to start politicizing. I mean, this is a time to look at the way men and women behave, particularly the way men behave toward women, and what's criminal and what's not criminal, what's civil. And it's a bad time to throw darts for political gain.
Ellen, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I appreciate you giving us a few minutes' time, and I hope you feel better. Your voice will get better. That
Bye.
Was Ellen Sampson. We've been talking this hour with Brian Bax. You heard from Rachel Stassenberger as well. And State Representative Jamie Becker Finn. Again, all of these stories, including that Supreme Court ruling that we got a few minutes in on, all of those are at nprnews.org. We will be updating this story throughout the day.